Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavi Takwe. The U.S. is stepping up pressure on Venezuela. The U.S. President Donald Trump has ordered an economic blockade on the country. In this edition of the debate, we will look at why the U.S. is taking aggressive measures and moves against Venezuela again, especially after the pick to replace Maduro. The self-recognized president and opposition leader Juan Guaido failed in his bid to unseat Maduro. Before starting tonight's debate, let's ask Press TV's Jesus Silva in Caracas about the reaction by Venezuelan government to the new U.S. moves. Well, Jesus, at this point, if you can tell us what type of reaction you have witnessed there in Venezuela from the officials there, and of course, what they may do about that.
At the present time, the government of Venezuela is making very clear to the world that this blockade by the U.S. has no legal ground at all. This is, in legal terms, a robbery, a confiscation for political purpose. And given the fact that a coup was attempted a few months ago and such coup failed because most of the military members and also the civilians are supporting the elected government of Nicolas Maduro, the next alternative for the U.S. government was to perpetrate this so-called economic aggression or so-called act of economic terrorism. So this operation, taking away property of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, is described by experts as an illegal confiscation and also the most severe embargo that has been committed in this region of the world. I'm speaking about the Americas in the last 30 years, or only comparable to Panama in the late 1980s, and also to Nicaragua in the late 1980s.
Okay, thank
so
you.
So the legal reaction of Venezuela will be to sue the United States and to make an effort for bringing back those properties to the hands of the Venezuelans.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Jesus Silva there, correspondent from Caracas. Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, founder of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, joins us from Washington, D.C. And we have journalist and commentator, Aileen Piva, who joins us from Sao Paulo. I'd like to welcome you both. Aileen Piva, let me start with you. You are looking at an economic blockade against Venezuela, the kinds which are not seen in the Western part of the world in 30 years, and it has been exerted on a number of countries at this point. What is your initial reaction to this severe sanction that has been placed economically on Venezuela?
I think one of the first reactions is to, especially on analysts that have been following the sanctions on Venezuela, is to feel that this is a very extreme measure and kind of feels that the United States is a bit desperate. All other attempts that they have imposed so far, may that be sanctions or even the support for Juan Guaido, hasn't had the outcome they were expecting to oust the government of Nicolas Maduro. So we feel like this is an extreme measure to actually, for finally, impose the total destruction of the country. This isn't a measure that is going to have severe impact on already battered economy in Venezuela. So I think this is something that we have to denounce internationally. The Venezuelan government is doing so. But I think what's the aim of the United States is the final destruction of the Venezuelan economy.
What is it that the U.S. hopes to achieve here, Michael Lane, by imposing such a blockade on Venezuela?
Well, I think that what Donald Trump has in mind here with these particular round of sanctions is checkmate. There have been a number of steps incremental taken by the United States against the government of Venezuela, which, by the way, the United States and many other governments around the world consider to be an illegitimate government. And the objective is to have a regime change to drive Maduro from power and to have the president of the National Assembly, Mr. Guaido, take over as president. He has already declared himself president, and that declaration has been recognized by any number of countries again. So this is the final final nail in the economic coffin of the Maduro regime, President Trump hopes. It is hopeful also the reason that the failed coup against Maduro didn't work last time was because any number of Venezuelan leaders, including members of the military, who allegedly were on board to effect the coup, decided at the last minute that they weren't going to do it. So it sort of fell very, very flat. There is reason to believe in Mr. Trump's eyes that many of those people that are loyal to Maduro have assets in the United States. And so to freeze those economic assets of people who are continuing to be loyal to Maduro that President Trump would like to flip is the reason for this economic blockade, and we'll see if it works.
And if it doesn't?
Well, I don't know how much more the screws can be tightened. I think President Trump will probably play a pat hand at that point. There was some discussion yesterday in what appeared to be maybe an offhanded comment that he was considering a military blockade of the country. They do have a rather extensive coastline, but no particular navy to speak of that can defend it. So it would be easy for the United States to enforce a blockade on the country. But I don't think President Trump is ready to take that step yet.
Well, the U.S. National Security Advisor, John Bolton, Eileen Piva, has said that the U.S. has taken measures to ensure Venezuelan people can access humanitarian goods. Back in January, a report came out that as many as 40,000 people, 40,000 people, may have died in Venezuela as a result of U.S. sanctions, which has made it harder for ordinary citizens to access food, medicine, etc. I'm going to mention the source in case Michael Lane wants to know. Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR, a progressive Washington, D.C.-based think tank. So this economic blockade would equal to perhaps more people dying. What does that say about the approach that the U.S. is taking on this matter? Eileen Piva?
Oh, sorry. So I think that it's something that when you see the effects of the sanctions on the people of Venezuela, it makes very clear that those sanctions, they are designed to cause the suffer of the people. So we have a government that feels that it has the power to actually lead people to die just to overthrow a government. What we are seeing now, this next step is going to tie this crisis even further. The Venezuelan government has taken some steps to try and overcome the reactions, what comes from the sanctions, but it's not going to be enough. And that's one thing that really worries me, because we talk a lot about the possibility of military intervention in Venezuela, of the U.S. actually doing a direct aggression against Venezuela, but I don't think it's going to need that. They are, throwing the country in such an economic chaos that they don't even need to throw bombs anymore. And that is something for us, for the internet, to be very worried about. I mean, we are talking about a country that has the largest military power in the world, but also controls the SWIFT system, that what makes them even more powerful than just having, nuclear weapons or such. So it's something that we have to be very attentive of. I think that the other analyst was saying about trying to turn people that are currently supporting the government. I think that is a strategy, but I also think that is not going to be the main point there, because the government in Venezuela still has the support of the military and of an important part of the people. So what the United States really, really wants is to create chaos long enough for the government to have to just, you know, give in.
Uh-huh. Well, the government is not giving in, Michael Lane, and they are having these talks with the opposition in Barbados. Norway's foreign ministry has said, I'm going to quote, the representatives of the main political actors in Venezuela are continuing the negotiations. This is recent as 2 days ago, saying that the parties have reiterated their willingness to advance in the search for an agreed upon and constitutional solution. Why would the U.S. want to exert such kind of a pressure on Venezuela when you have talks going on?
Well, I don't think the timing is all that mysterious. Yes, the talks are ongoing. National Security Advisor John Bolton did say that the talks were essentially going nowhere and that he considered Maduro to be not an honest player at the table, that he was just stalling for time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Be that as it may, however much of that may or may not be true, the Lima Group is having a big meeting today in Lima. And there needed to be a huge topic for discussion. And so this announcement yesterday, leading into today's Lima Group meeting, with many, many other countries attending as observers, et cetera, set the stage for even further announcements that will be made, I believe, at the end of the Lima Group meeting this afternoon, if it does come to a conclusion today. And we will see a show of solidarity among those countries around the world who think this is serious enough to band together to make that statement that it is time for the Maduro regime to step down and let what they would consider to be a legitimate government step up and lead the people of Venezuela. That's the timing of this whole thing.
It's interesting how our guest there, Aline Piva, refers to the legitimate governments to come into power. I'm not too sure who he's referring to, unless it's Guaido, who has declared himself. He himself declared himself as the president. So that legitimization, I'm not too sure how that word is being used here by our guests. Perhaps you can tell us. But I'd like to ask you, Aline Piva, beforehand. Maduro has said, after the dialogue was progressing, that he would even meet. Well, he said meet with the devil. He's talking about the U.S., that he's even willing to meet with the U.S. After talking about the progress of the talks. Doesn't that show that Maduro is serious in its intent, or genuine in its intent, to try to resolve the problem that is happening?
The Venezuelan government has been showing over and over again that they are willing to go to the negotiation table and to find a democratic solution for this undemocratic process that has been imposed in Venezuela by the United States, by the opposition within Venezuela, and other countries in the region and elsewhere that are completely aligned with the United States. So I think it's important to always notice that it's always the Venezuelan government, Maduro's government, who calls for the negotiation table. These talks that are being held right now with the opposition in the Caribbean that started in Oslo, it was called by the government. The last time that they had a talk like this, they just end up, they were ready to sign a pact with the government, and they, out of the blue, just stood out and left the table. So I think we are talking, this is really important, we are talking about our opposition, because the narrative is that the Maduro's government is undemocratic, is a dictatorship, doesn't want to negotiate. And at the end of the day, when you look at the facts, when you look at the timeline of the relationship of the Maduro government with the opposition, it's exactly the opposite. It's always the opposition who tries to not make a deal, to not make any kind of diplomatic, democratic talks move forward.
We have a statement amongst many, Michael Lane, that U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton made just hours ago. This particular one, I'd like to ask who he's perhaps talking about. He said that the executive order on Venezuela authorizes U.S. to sanction any foreigners who support or provide goods and services to the Maduro government. Do you think he's taking a swipe there at Russia, perhaps, or even maybe Iran, or any other countries, perhaps, that you can tell us that are supportive of the Maduro government?
Yeah, I think it's a short list of countries that you can say are on that list, and you've accurately identified the first two. Russia and Iran would certainly be countries that would be subject to sanctions if they were to provide material economic support to Maduro. I would add to that list Cuba, and then I would add to that list China. There may be other countries, but those are the big four. I would suspect that at that time John Bolton was talking about.
So to stick with you, Michael Lane, here, how much of a factor does that play into this economic blockade, this indirect targeting through this type of executive order of perhaps China and Russia?
Well, China doesn't have that many sanctions on them. Let's take Russia for starters. Russia has, you know, sanctions against so many people that are close to President Putin at this point that it's difficult to figure out where this is. Now, I haven't read the executive order yet, but I suspect it goes pretty deep into who might be evaluated as providing that assistance, which means the further down the chain of the Russian government you go, anyone who's active in making this happen is going to be subject to sanctions as well. So it's broadening it to a bunch of people who may be just loyal government employees in Russia who will now also be subject to sanctions if they can be identified as being part of this. In the case of China, their sanctions are not as broad as the ones are, obviously, against Russia. And I think that this will ratchet up the tensions, the economic tensions between the United States and China, which are already at a historic, really, really tightly stretched because of our trade dispute with China. This could make it go even further. It'll be interesting to see exactly how far it does go.
Alim Piva, as our guest mentioned today, there is a meeting that's happening in Lima of 60 countries to discuss this crisis that Venezuela is experiencing. Do you think that any of these countries are for the regime change the way that the U.S. wants? Or if they are, don't you think that they are miscalculating their own country, that perhaps if this happens to Venezuela, they may be the next victim?
I think they don't even put that in the equation. I think they are so, the level of alignment that we see nowadays with the governments in the region, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Peru, all the governments that are part of the Group of Lima, they are so deeply aligned with the United States that they don't even put that in the equation. And also, we have to remember, it already happened, right? We had regime change here in Brazil with the coup against Dilma Rousseff. We had regime change in Paraguay, Honduras, and several other countries in the region. The thing is that Venezuela is the only country in the region still holding up. I mean, we have Bolivia, of course, but the level of attacks are not the same. They have a different kind of relationship with Bolivia. But with Venezuela, I think it's more a matter of a symbol. The symbolism of having Maduro and the Bolivarian Revolution is still holding up despite of this complete blockade that they have imposed on the country.
Michael Lane, there are a couple things here that are starkly similar to two other countries in terms of the dynamics involved here, or the composition of what's going on with Venezuela and the U.S. And those two countries are Yemen and Syria. Yemen is experiencing a blockade of all kinds. It's a blockaded country. I'm not saying the U.S. is doing it, but one of U.S.'s strongest allies, Saudi Arabia, is doing it. Are we looking at the U.S. approaching that type of blockade on Yemen? And I mentioned Syria, and that is because whenever talks were going on the political side for a resolution, I don't know if you recall, but on a number of occasions, something would happen when the talks would fall apart. And I'm making that reference to the talks happening now. Do you see these similarities, and do you agree with it?
Well, you know, the similarity is obviously there. Whether it's the same cause and effect, I really couldn't say. But, you know, the United States has one objective. The Trump administration, excuse me, has one objective. And that is for Nicolas Maduro to step down and leave the presidency of Venezuela to make room for what I had referred to as the United States considers the legitimate president to be Guaido, who is the president of the National Assembly. It is the United States' legal argument that Maduro's creation of the Constituent Assembly, whose job was to rewrite the Constitution to keep him in office, was an unconstitutional and therefore illegal act, an illegitimate act. And if you go back to the way the Constitution was originally written, then the head of the National Assembly takes office in the absence of a legitimate president. So that would be Guaido, of course. Now, looking at what's going to happen here in the future, since Trump's only acceptable outcome is Maduro stepping down, Maduro either negotiates a parachute exit for himself, or this goes on as long as he can keep it going on. I don't know what Mr. Maduro's decision is going to be, but I do know that he doesn't have a strong hand. He's sitting there with a 2, a 3, and a 5, and an 8, while the 60 countries that are working to remove him from office do hold most of the cards. Eventually, Maduro is going to go. It's only a question of when and under what circumstances. I think his negotiating power is as strong as it's going to be today. If he waits until tomorrow or later, his negotiating power is going to abate.
Okay, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much for that. Founder of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane. I'd also like to thank journalist and commentator Aline Piva from Sao Paulo. Thanks for tuning into another edition of The Debate. From Mika Betahwe and the entire team in the Capitol, Tehran is goodbye.